You all crazy.
Why are we crazy?
Because you don't know how to stay alive. That's the secret of life.
But we have a war to win.
But America will lose the war. Italy will win it.
America's the strongest nation on earth. The American fighting man is the best trained, the best equipped, the best fed.
Exactly. Italy, on the other hand, is one of the weakest nations on earth. And the Italian fighting man is hardly equipped at all. And that's why my country is doing so well, while your country is doing so poorly.
That's just silly. Italy was occupied by the Germans and is now being occupied by us. You call that doing well?
Of course I do. The Germans are being driven out and we're still here. In a few years you'll be gone and we will still be here. You see, Italy is a very poor, weak country. That is what makes us so strong. Strong enough to survive this war and still be in existence long after your country has been destroyed.
What are you talking about? America is not going to be destroyed.
Never.
Well?
Rome was destroyed. Greece was destroyed. Persia was destroyed. Spain was destroyed. All great countries are destroyed. Why not yours? How much longer do you think your country will last? Forever?
Well, forever is a long time, I guess.
Very long.
Don't you have any principles?
Oh, of course not.
No morality?
Oh, I'm a very moral man. And Italy is a very moral country. That's why we will certainly come out on top again if we succeed in being defeated.
You talk like a madman.
But I live like a sane one. I was a fascist when Mussolini was on top. Now that he has been deposed, I am anti-fascist. When the Germans were here, I was fanatically pro-German. Now I'm fanatically pro-American. You'll find no more loyal partisan in all of Italy than myself.
You're a shameful opportunist. What you don't understand is that it's better to die on your feet than to live on your knees.
You have it backwards. It's better to live on your feet than to die on your knees. I know.
How do you know?
Because I am 107 years old. How old are you?
I'll be 20 in January.
If you live.
All right, welcome to the show. I'm Scott Wharton. This is my show. That's a clip from the movie of Joseph Heller's great book, Catch-22. It's a pretty good movie for making a movie out of a book, you know? That's what I think. Shameful opportunist. Well, that's what I call that clip anyway. All right, well, so yeah, this is a show. It's my show. This is Scott Wharton Show. And today on the show, Jonathan Landay will be here. The great reporter from McClatchy Newspapers. And he'll be on to talk about torture. Torture, torture, torture. Lots of torture on the show this week. I tell you, it's torture. But yeah, Landay, he's a good reporter, man. There ain't too many good reporters, so I like celebrating them when I can. And the torture thing, no one ever went to jail for being the Republicans who tortured people to death. That doesn't seem right, does it? Not that they ever are going to go to jail, but at the very least, we can still talk about it all the time. And I don't know what that's good for. It's good for anything, but seems important. I don't know. You know, George W. Bush, the guy that crucified that guy to death that one time. Oh, yeah. And not just that one time. Well, you know, in some cases, it's perfectly justifiable to crucify somebody to death. You know, if they're in defiance of the empire. Isn't that right, conservative Republicans of America? Isn't that what you believe? Ah, come on, you don't believe things. You believe whatever you were told last by Republicans. So, by a bunch of former commie pinko neocons. Isn't that funny? I think it's funny. A bunch of commies in the Democrat Party, they're the farthest to the left in the Democratic Party. They're warmongers. So they hate the Soviet Union because the Soviet Union is Stalinist, and they're a different kind of commie. They're the Trotskyites. So they hate the USSR because Stalin, of course, purged the Trotskyites and murdered Trotsky to death with an ice pick in his ear. So they hated the Soviet Union. And, of course, many of them were very closely associated with the State of Israel. And when liberals started becoming hippies during the Vietnam War, they decided to move right because their dedication to war comes first at all costs and to the interests of a foreign power. So that's the only reason that the neoconservatives even became Reaganite Republicans in the first place. Irving Kristol even wrote a book called Two Cheers for Capitalism about what a giant Keynesian welfare state we need to go along with our, you know, national greatness conservatism. Bunch of pinko commie Trotskyites running the Republican Party. Well, after all, the conservatives barely know how to read. They get all their information from talk radio like a bunch of nitwits. So somebody's got to be the brains around here. That's what William F. Buckley thought. He went and hired Whitaker Chambers and Sidney Hook and James Burnham, and the entire founding staff of the National Review was a bunch of Reds. I mean, ex-Reds. But who had no real relationship with the legacy of the American Revolution that virtually any other American would think would be the goal of conservatism, would be conserving the gains of the American Revolution for the people of this country, right? But no, that never had anything to do with neoconservatism at all. They don't look to Jefferson, they look to Leo Strauss, who looked to Carl Schmitt. who looked to Plato. Never mind anything learned since Plato. We just need some philosopher kings to tell us some noble lies and give us a war for our national greatness and the benefit of Israel. That's what a conservative thinks. What a former Trotskyite pinko commie tells them to think. So, it does raise the interesting question of whether somebody like, say, I don't know, Rush Limbaugh, for example, or John Bolton, are they actually neocons? Or are they just cons? Right? These are guys who came into the conservative movement as like Goldwater types, presumably, something like that. John Bolton, he was never a pinko commie. And yet all of his interests are in with a bunch of former pinko commies and students of former pinko commies, because we're on the third generation here. So Leo Strauss, former Trotskyite, Leon Wallstetter, former Trotskyite, and then they trained Wolfowitz and Pearl and many of the others at the University of Chicago, and then of course Irving Kristol and Norman Podhoretz, both former Trotskyites, the founding staff of the National Review, as I said, former Trotskyites. So anyway, I don't know. I think that's kind of funny. And that's why, by the way, these neocons seem like moderates sometimes. You know, to the uninitiated, it seems like a moderate bipartisan thing to be for every kind of warfare and welfare and regulation and empire building overseas. Because these guys really are centrists. They're extremists, but they are centrists. They are liberal Republicans. In some cases, people like Richard Pearl, he's still a card-carrying Democrat. He's a conservative Democrat, you know, like Barack Obama. And they are the centrists, but they're the extremists. They're the ones with the consensus for the grand plot. murder-suicide writ large, the American Empire, to the detriment of everyone on Earth. And ultimately, to, like our friend in Catch-22 was explaining there, to the destruction of our country here. See you in a minute. Oh, man, I'm late. Sure hope I can make my flight.
Stand there.
Me? I am standing here.
Come here.
Okay.
Hands up. Turn around.
Whoa, easy.
Into the scanner. Ooh, what's this in your pants?
Hey, slow down. It's just my...
Hold it right there. Your wallet has tripped the metal detector. What's this? The Bill of Rights?
That's right. It's just a harmless stainless steel business card-sized copy of the Bill of Rights from SecurityEdition.com. They're for exposing the TSA as a bunch of liberty-destroying goons who've never protected anyone from anything. Sir, now give me back my wallet and get out of my way. Got a plane to catch.
Have a nice day.
Play a leading role in the security theater with the Bill of Rights Security Edition from SecurityEdition.com. It's the size of a business card, so it fits right in your wallet, and it's guaranteed to trip the metal detectors wherever the police state goes. That's SecurityEdition.com. And don't forget their great Fourth Amendment socks.
Hey, guys, I got his laptop.
The military-industrial complex. The disastrous rise of misplaced power.
Hey, all Scott Horton here. I'd like for you to read this book, The War State, by Michael Swanson. America's always gone to war a lot, though in older times it would disarm for a bit between each one. But in World War II, the U.S. built a military and intelligence apparatus so large, it ended up reducing the former constitutional government to an almost ceremonial role and converting our economy into an engine of destruction. In The War State, Michael Swanson does a great job telling the sordid history of the rise of this national security state, relying on important first-hand source material, but writing for you and me. Find out how Presidents Truman, Eisenhower, and Kennedy all alternately empowered and fought to control this imperial beast, and how the USA has gotten to where it is today. Corrupt, bankrupt, soaked in blood, despised by the world. The War State by Michael Swanson. Available at Amazon.com and at Audible.com. Or just click the logo in the right-hand margin at ScottHorton.org.
We should take nothing for granted.
All right, you guys. I'm Scott Horton. This is my show, The Scott Horton Show. Coming up here in a few, Jonathan Landay. Great reporter for McClatchy Newspapers. Debunked the entire case for war with Iraq before it happened. And a great reporter on a great many issues for a very long time and really good on torture. And has been breaking major stories for McClatchy about the new torture report. And in fact, that whole dispute between the CIA and the Senate Intelligence Committee that ended up involving the Justice Department. That story was broken by Jonathan Landay and his associates there at McClatchy Newspapers. So what's funny is, as huge as that is, well, I don't know. That's the least of the interview. There's so much to cover in the interview. But remember, that's the one where I interviewed Jacob Hornberger about what did he think when Dianne Feinstein went to the floor of the Senate and talked about... an emergency for the separation of powers. The CIA called the cops on the Senate for receiving a document that the Senate swears the CIA handed over to them. Their own internal notes to prove that they're lying about all their claims, that the Senate is wrong about all their claims about what the CIA did in terms of torturing people and lying about it. Is that clear enough? And, you know, as we also talked about on the show, she's only mad because she's protecting her staff. I'm like, yeah, you can't mess with my staff. She doesn't care. It was hilarious, actually, listening to her go on about the Fourth Amendment, Executive Order 12333, the one that authorizes the NSA to collect, signals intelligence overseas, but supposedly has a part in it which bans them from doing this, except we've learned from all the Snowden revelations that they use 12333 as a giant loophole to collect on Americans anyway, and she cited that for crying out loud, and then the FISA Amendments Act, which has its, again, supposed limits, but in fact legalizes what was the completely illegal secret wiretapping program of the Bush years. So it's not that she cares at all about the Constitution, but still, she sure was right. And when it comes to a fight between the Senate and the CIA, the Senate Intelligence Committee chairwoman and the CIA, in a republic, in a limited constitutional republic, never even mind if this was a constitutional republic, we wouldn't have a CIA at all. But anyway, if this was anything like a state ruled by law, then Brennan would have to resign immediately. The fact that he hasn't resigned ought to be the scandal of the year. And all TV wants to talk about is literally an athlete on trial for murder of his girlfriend, not of a politician or anything, but just his girlfriend, in South Africa. In South Africa, a local crime story on the southern tip of the planet Earth is a top headline on CNN all damn day during this. You realize that? These people. Spare me the missing airplane, which is underwater somewhere still. Sorry. I tried to get Doug Bandow on the show for you. He'd be better to listen to than me. He knows all kinds of stuff about all kinds of stuff, and I'm going to ask him someday here, soon, maybe, about Ukraine. He's written some really good stuff for Forbes lately on Ukraine. I really like seeing Doug Bandow writing for places like that because he writes good sense a lot of times. Occasionally, he'll have some caveat that pisses me off or something, but I mean, he's not a libertarian anarchist, but he's pretty damn good on everything, and he's really smart and really well-educated on all the issues. So I love interviewing him, and I love seeing him, in writing, because I get that sort of thrill that, like, cool, someone is going to see this. I'm certain of it, you know? Anyway, I'm still working on that. Trying to get Bandow on the show to talk about Ukraine for you. Oh, you know what? Glenn Greenwald news coming up. I'll talk about Glenn. He's winning the Polk Award today, him and Poitras and all that for the Snowden stuff. But let me talk real quick here about this thing in Arizona. Nevada. This rancher who's been grazing on, you know, so-called public land, so-called government property that he has apparently homesteaded. Sounds like he's got a pretty good case. He's homesteaded this land as ranch land for his cattle, and he's come up against the national government. And I love the way the shorthanded, as George W. Bush would say when he's lying. Well, I shorthanded it. Yeah, he skipped all the truth and got straight to a bunch of crap. The way they shorthanded it in the AP was, well, this guy has racked up millions of dollars in fines and fees that are meant to protect this turtle. The fees are meant to protect the turtle, huh? So it's not that he is banned from grazing there. It's just that he was supposed to give the government a bunch of money. And then that, the fact of that payment would have protected the turtle, huh? That's funny. You know, I heard too that if you're, phase is in the third mood of Jupiter, moon of Jupiter, that's going to determine your luck in love and business this week. But show me the cause and effect there, pal. Show me the causation. I might entertain it. It sounds like, yeah, they're trying to extort this rancher's wealth away from him. On the other hand, it's not an open and shut case of private property rights. And I suppose if you're to try to take the government side, you could say, look, this guy wants to graze on the commons for free, for no charge, and take all he wants and all of that kind of thing. Now, the problem is the tragedy of the commons, but, you know, I say privatize every last scrap of land in Nevada. Why does the national government own any land in Nevada? It's ridiculous. But anyway, I don't know everything about this guy, and I don't know everything about his ranch and where his property lines are and everything about the case, but I am a believer in liberty and property rights, and I hate the U.S. national government beyond all reason, and the state of Nevada, for that matter, and it seems pretty clear to me that they ought to leave this guy the hell alone. For the facts, you know what I'll do is I will send you guys over to Stefan Molyneux's website, because I trust his judgment on a lot of things, and I saw about half of a YouTube that he put out explaining the situation here, and I think it sounded like a pretty damn good summary of what was going on as far as the facts. You know, I think it's good that there are people showing up. In fact, whether I really know all the facts and whether I'm certain I agree with them 100% or not, I'm glad that people are standing up for their own beliefs about what's right or not and are going to protest and are going to try and help this guy. But man, I sure would hate to see somebody's, you know, Red Dawn fantasy of some confrontation that starts the big revolution or that kind of crap in the name of this. I mean, I don't know. There's a line somewhere where the argument that, hey, man, get a really good lawyer and fight it out in the courts is no longer relevant. I mean, there's a point where that is a moot point. And actually, a free man should not have to surrender his rights. Again, I'm not certain exactly where the line is on the property claims in this particular case, but I'm just saying hypothetically and theoretically, the standard argument, my standard argument, is go to court, okay? It ain't martial law, it ain't NDAA roundup, it ain't complete lawless totalitarianism, only kind of lawless totalitarianism. But as long as the courts are open, you need to go and try to work this thing out peacefully through their system as best you possibly can. That's the standard answer, right? Somebody sends a SWAT team for me. Hands up. Hopefully the other Scott Horton will come down from New York and be my lawyer and save my ass, and maybe they won't cart me off to Guantanamo. I'm not in violation of any deliberate law-breaking offenses or anything like that, so I should be okay for now, I hope. They could persecute me, but they can't really prosecute me. I ain't done nothing as far as that goes. I don't own any property, so there's no question of where the line at the end of my property is and public land begins for my animals or anything like that. But that's the standard answer, right? And then there's civil disobedience that says, no, screw you, man. I'm not going along with it. And that's all right, too. And at some point, there's violent disobedience. And I can't conceive of a circumstance where I really recommend it, honestly. In principle, it's possible for it to be legitimate. I'm not arguing that. We're all sons of the American Revolution here, right? Or, you know, I don't think any of us would feel the need to invoke any other. There comes a time when maybe. I don't think that time is now. I think that if a single shot, and there's already somebody's been tasered or something, but supposedly there's all these militia guys going there, and I'm sure that whatever happens, there's a 99% chance it'll be the government escalating it for no reason out of their own cowardice and maybe kill somebody or something like that. But if that happens, this could actually only backfire and only serve to benefit the state and a state of martial law in this country, or a de facto state of martial law in this country, set further precedents for military assets to be used against Americans. And I don't know, man, who in this country outside of the state is in a hurry to see one drop of blood spilled, right? What we need here is very cool heads prevailing. And you know what? I really like the idea of a bunch of armed guys showing up and not using their arms too, because, you know, why not? They're free men. But, you know, I don't know. Is there any way to get the government to scale down this thing? You know, after Waco, they had their thing with the Montana Freemen, and they really scaled back the state of siege compared to what they'd done to the Davidians. They had learned that lesson for a little while here. I don't know, guys. I got a bad feeling about this, though. Hey, y'all. Scott Horton here for WallStreetWindow.com. Mike Swanson knows his stuff. He made a killing running his own hedge fund and always gets out of the stock market before the government-generated bubbles pop.
which is, by the way, what he's doing right now, selling all his stocks and betting on gold and commodities. Sign up at WallStreetWindow.com and get real-time updates from Mike on all his market moves. It's hard to know how to protect your savings and earn a good return in an economy like this. Mike Swanson can help. Follow along on paper and see for yourself. WallStreetWindow.com. Hey, y'all, Scott Horton here for CashIntoCoins.com. So you want to buy some Bitcoins? CashIntoCoins.com makes it fast, easy, and safe to get Bitcoins. Just deposit the money into their account at any of the major banks they support, and then just email them a picture of the receipt and your Bitcoin address, and you get your Bitcoins. Almost always the same day it clears. In a tough, competitive new market, CashIntoCoins.com has the advantage. A great system and great customer service to keep you coming back. That's CashIntoCoins.com. Just click the link in the right margin at ScottHorton.org. All right, you guys, welcome back to the show. I'm Scott Horton. This is my show, The Scott Horton Show. My website is ScottHorton.org. Keep all my interviews there. More than 3,000 of them now, going back to right around this time, 2003. There at ScottHorton.org. You can follow me on Twitter at Scott Horton Show. And introducing Jonathan Landay. He's top dog over there at McClatchy Newspapers. That's McClatchyDC.com. If you'd listened, he could have truthed you out of war with Iraq back in 2002, and he's been doing great journalism on the national security beat all over the place and on torture and many other things ever since. Welcome back to the show, Jonathan. How are you doing?
Thanks for having me. I'm just fine.
Good. Very happy to have you back on the show here. A lot of great journalism out of you guys on the torture beat, especially here, and the CIA beat, I guess, on this issue in general. First of all, very important piece out here. I believe this is the latest, where you talk about 20 major findings. Now, from what I understand, the way I read through between the lines here, didn't sound like you've actually read the summary, but you've been talking to people who have. Is that right?
No, we got the 20 conclusions of the report. There are 20 bulleted conclusions, and we got them.
Oh, you got the list of the 20. All right. Okay. Well, so let's go ahead and go through it then. Have at it.
Okay. The one we focused on, because a lot of them are known, you know, the sweeping ones are known because committee members have talked about them before, and that is the basic finding that the use of what the CIA called and the Bush administration called EITs or sorry, Scott, can we start this again? Because I'm blanking on the EITs.
Enhanced interrogation techniques.
Thank you very much. Sorry about that. The fact is that that we've been told by the committee members that the report, 4 years, $40 million, 6.3 million pages of classified documents found that the EITs, enhanced interrogation techniques, did not produce very little intelligence of any value, and that the CIA misled the Congress, the Bush White House, and the American public on just how effective these were in producing intelligence. Mm-hmm. So some of that stuff is already known. But what we focused on in the latest story was a finding that appears to challenge the key defense on which the CIA and the Bush administration relied, the key legal defense on which they relied in arguing that the use of the EITs did not constitute torture. And this was a finding that said that the CIA, well, let me read it to you verbatim, quote, the CIA repeatedly provided inaccurate information to the Department of Justice, impeding a proper legal analysis of the CIA's detention and interrogation program, unquote. And that's kind of a pretty devastating finding in that the Department of Justice, a particular office there called the Office of Legal Counsel, mm-hmm. was the office that produced the legal opinions that said that these EITs, these 10 harsh interrogation measures, which included waterboarding, did not constitute torture. And this seems to pull the rug out from under that. And that's because it seems that those opinions that were produced by the Justice Department were based on quote-unquote facts about the program that were given to the Department of Justice by the CIA itself. And so if those facts were wrong, then that raises serious questions about the veracity or of these legal opinions. And indeed, the legal opinions themselves, in the legal opinions themselves, which have been declassified, the Justice Department, in fact, says that. It says that we understand that these are the facts that you have given us, i.e. the CIA has given to the Justice Department. But if any of these facts turn out to change, then that could undermine the whole, this legal opinion. And so that seems to be where the report has gone.
Well, yeah, no, that's extremely important. So in the bullet points here at McClatchyDC.com, you talk about how they evaded and impeded oversight from the White House and from the Senate, which we can get into that. But most importantly, if I understand you right, what you're saying is that in the original John Yoo memos, which purport to legalize and cover these CIA men for whatever crimes that they commit by purportedly, you know, legalizing them within their threshold of organ failure pain or whatever, as they define it, that the CIA was providing such faulty information to the Department of Justice that it's even, as you say, in their memos, it says if this information isn't right, this memo can't cover you. So even if you buy the legal theory that this memo could cover torture, then now that is terribly undermined too.
Well, yeah, I mean, my desk is awfully messy with lots of this stuff, and I'm trying to find one of the opinions so that I can read that precise language. And unfortunately, I think I lent it to a colleague, the one I wanted to read to you. But yes, essentially, what the Justice Department itself put in these memos to the CIA's then Senior Deputy General Counsel John Rizzo was basically our opinions are based on quote unquote facts that you yourself have given us. And we understand that you have no other facts at your disposal, but if you do, that could alter this opinion.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
And I guess we already know, but now it's been reaffirmed that they were already torturing Abu Zubaydah and others.
No. I don't know about Abu Zubaydah, but we do know that before that they had been using, they had been subjecting detainees to some kind to harsh interrogation techniques before they went to the Justice Department to say is what we're doing legal, and that may be exactly why they went to the Justice Department, because someone said, hey guys, we're doing this stuff and do we know that this is legal? Well, we better go to the Justice Department to get them to weigh in on this. The reason I couched my language the way I did was because the first legal opinion was issued in, I believe, August of 2002, and it was seeking the Justice Department's legal approval to use the enhanced interrogation techniques on Abu Zubaydah, who underwent them later that year.
Mm-hmm.
But it's been established that, in fact, other detainees, and perhaps he was one of them, were subjected to unauthorized unapproved interrogation techniques prior to the CIA going to the Office of Legal Counsel and asking for Office of Legal Counsel's legal advice on the use of these interrogation techniques.
Mm-hmm. And do legal experts that you talk to, does anybody question whether these memos can actually legalize crimes like torture in the first place?
The human rights community has been up in arms over these memos ever since they were declassified or ever since they were reported in the press, raising serious questions about saying that they seriously question the legal analysis. And indeed, the Justice Department itself, I believe, and I'm shuffling through the papers on my desk, issued an opinion, I think it was in... here it is. I've got it right here. It's a memorandum for the Attorney General, June 11th, 2009, saying withdrawal of Office of Legal Counsel opinion, where they actually withdraw one of the legal opinions that was issued by the Department of Justice in this case, So the Justice Department itself withdrew a whole series of these legal opinions that were being that basically legalized the use of these of waterboarding and other techniques that many people consider torture.
Yeah, I mean, I've spoken for years with the other Scott Horton, and he was the former chair of the New York Bar Association's mm-hmm. committees on international rights and human rights and on international law, both mm-hmm. different committees there. I just combined the two into one somehow. But anyway, so he is a real expert on this, and he's been all along comparing these lawyers here to mob lawyers who the Justice Department is happy to put in prison on a regular basis for helping the mob get around the law. That's not legal representation, and I'm just a lawyer here is no defense. They'll lock you in prison if you try that.
Yeah, well, I can't speak. Yeah, I can't speak for the people who put these memos together. I can only report what it is that we're being told or right. we're being leaked.
Right, right. But I just wanted to point out that I didn't want it to leave it where it sounds like, well, you know, they were torturing the guy before the memo, so that's the scandal, when really the memos shouldn't matter either way.
Yeah,
because
exactly.
It's always a crime to torture somebody. But I understand you're only reporting the facts here. I just wanted to make sure that, you know, that was in there somewhere. So now on the White House oversight, can you be any more specific about what they weren't telling the White House?
I simply cannot. And whether or not, and I suspect we're going to get that once the executive branch, or what we would hope we would get that, once the executive branch completes what's so-called the declassification review of the report's 480-page executive summary and the findings that underpin the conclusions. Those are undergoing declassification review now. We're not sure when that's going to be finished. Dianne Feinstein, the chairwoman of the Senate Intelligence Committee, said that she would like to have had it done by, I think it's like early next month, but whether or not that actually happens is in question. So no, it's hard to say what they're referring to, because I myself wrote a story back in 2009 about how interrogators were under pressure from the White House and others to use aggressive interrogation methods to try and obtain intelligence linking Al-Qaeda and 9/11 with Saddam Hussein, because the White House, the Bush administration, was desperate to do that, so that to justify the invasion of Iraq. And, of course, it never did, because that link never existed. But it could be that that this finding has something to do with that.
Mm. Yeah, that's a very interesting point. Of course, that was on my list for subjects to get to here. I was thinking of the ABC report about how all the principals were there, at least for a time, everybody except the president, but the entire National Security Cabinet and the head of the CIA and the vice president and the attorney general, they were all there while the CIA was torturing Khatani, I believe it was, down at Guantanamo Bay. And then, of course, there was the famous quote of John Ashcroft saying, why are we doing this and meeting like this in the White House? History is not going to look kindly on this. And that made it sound like it was all a very, very top-down project, at least for a while there, before they passed it off to their deputies, no?
Yeah, but no, I think that's absolutely right. That would be, it'd be really interesting to see what if, and perhaps what they're referring to is another finding, which is the main finding, which is that the use of these methods to obtain intelligence, in fact, produce very little valuable intelligence. And perhaps what this means is that the CIA was misrepresenting the effectiveness of these methods to the White House in order to continue using them in the belief that they would produce at some point the intelligence that the White House was looking for. It's just something we're going to have to wait and see the report, once it's issued, or what we're going to see of the report once it's issued, will illuminate us on.
Mm-hmm. And now, regarding your previous article that you referred to there about the torture and the Iraq connection there, if anybody wants to Google it up, it's abusive tactics used to seek Iraq Al-Qaeda link at McClatchyDC.com by Jonathan S. Lande, April 21st, 2009. Mm-hmm. And so... the first person that comes to mind here is, and I haven't reread this one in a while. In fact, I just Googled it back up. But the first person that comes to mind would be a guy named Al-Libi. And he was the guy that had implicated Saddam in teaching the Al-Qaeda guys in airplane hijacking and chemical weapons manufacture under torture in Egypt. Is that right?
Yeah, I believe that. I don't know if it was in Egypt. I think it may have actually even been in Libya. I'm not sure. I'm having to dredge up, because I think that I don't remember, and perhaps, Scott, you can correct me on this, but I do know that wasn't there one of the detainees who eventually, quote-unquote, committed suicide?
That was him, yeah.
That was him. Wasn't that in Libya?
Yeah, it was, but I guess, see, I don't have a footnote for this, so I'm sorry. I better
may very
be
well
sure.
Have taken,
but I was under the impression that he was in Egypt, tortured there, and then was turned over to Gaddafi.
That's very possible.
And Gaddafi might as well have tortured him more and then eventually murdered him, it sounded like. But
That may very well have been the case, because it's, you know, there's so much of this stuff to remember. I got to admit that I'm having a hard time remembering the exact details of that case. But yes, but what we did learn... what we did learn was that he told his interrogators this stuff to stop the abuse, and it turned out to be wrong.
And by the way, did your sources ever make it clear whether that was really their purpose? Was, we know it ain't true, but just beat it out of somebody. We don't want to make it out of whole cloth.
No, they were convinced that it was true. Let's not forget, this began before the Bush administration. This began with a book that was written by an author named Laurie Milroy, in which she basically proposed the preposterous idea that Saddam was behind the first World Trade Center attack. And that book was received, I believe the foreword was written by James Woolsey, who was on the Bush administration's defense advisory board. It's an outside advisory board, along with Richard Perle, and these were some of the main advocates of the idea that Saddam was behind 9/11. And so that's kind of where this came from. This is the genesis of this idea, which they went on to promote rather aggressively after 9/11, both within the government. You had Wolfowitz. I think it was Wolfowitz who wrote the. I think it was Wolfowitz who wrote the intro or to Laurie Milroy's book. It's either him or I can't remember because I don't have it here, or Woolsey. But nevertheless, these were all people who believed that Saddam had to have been behind 9/11 because no terrorist group was capable of doing such a thing without state support. And that's where they sort of convinced themselves of this and then went out to try and find that intelligence. And don't forget, they set up their own parallel intelligence system because they didn't trust the CIA or the DIA. And they had this effort centered in the office of former Undersecretary of Defense Douglas Fife, and in the office of what's known as the Office of Special Plans, and they thought they had found this evidence or this intelligence that the CIA had missed, and they produced their own intelligence report, which turned out to be bogus. Mm-hmm. And so, no, they didn't know it was wrong. They absolutely thought it was right. And it was just a question of having to get the intelligence to confirm what they believed.
Mm-hmm. And then I think you say in this report, too, if I remember it right, that there was a real uptick. And it wasn't just Al-Libi. There were others, too, and they just... The torturees figured out real quick. The victims figured out real quick. These guys want to hear something about Iraq. I better come up with something. And that, and I think you say that there was a real uptick in this right before the invasion and right after it. Because if we don't have any warehouses full of VX, we better have something here.
Well, I don't recall that, but I do. But look, this interrogation began. These interrogations.
God, I hope
began.
I got that right. I'm sorry if I didn't.
That's quite all right, but I mean, you know, this stuff began after the invasion of Afghanistan and continued right through 2006. So we know that at least as far as 2006, this was one of the main things that they were trying to obtain, issues they were trying to confirm through intelligence, quote unquote intelligence, which didn't exist. And let's not forget, the CIA was very quick to tell the Bush administration that it had no intelligence. There was no intelligence linking Saddam with al-Qaeda. Almost immediately after the World Trade Center attack and the attack on the Pentagon, they were asked to go back and look at this, and I believe they produced at least three, if not more, major reports, which said no, there is no intelligence that implicating Saddam or showing that Saddam has been cooperating with al-Qaeda. And that intelligence, the Bush administration chose to ignore and at the same time chose to accept the CIA analysis that Saddam Hussein was reconstituting his weapons of mass destruction. And hence we get the cherry-picking of intelligence by the Bush administration.
Mm-hmm. Now, there are two guys mentioned in your most recent report here who were killed in CIA custody during a regime of enhanced this or that, whatever they call it. Gul Rahman was basically died of hypothermia at the salt pit in Afghanistan. And he's the same guy that we've known about for a long time,
yes.
Right? Or is
yes.
this a different guy?
No, it's the same guy. Same guy.
Okay.
And I believe someone, you know, a contractor was. No, that was another case. I don't know that anyone. There was another case involving the death of a guy in Assadabad, another part of Afghanistan, that a CIA contractor, I believe, was convicted of. But this case, no, I don't. This was the hypothermia case where a guy was drenched in water and left to freeze and died of hypothermia. I don't think anybody ever. There was any ever prosecution. There was an investigation. Let's not forget that after the destruction of the videotapes of Abu Zubaydah's interrogation, the Obama administration appointed a special prosecutor to look at that, and the special prosecutor Dunham, I think his name was, or Durham, looked at alleged. At detainee cases and ended up investigating two, and I believe Gul Rahman was one of the two, but no charges were ever produced. No, there was never any the cases, both investigations were dropped.
Mm-hmm. And then I don't know how to say it. Is it Manidal al-Jamadi? He was the guy that was crucified to death and suffocated to death basically by his the way he was hung from the ceiling in the Abu Ghraib prison, right?
You're going somewhere where I cannot. That's not something that I can talk about because I'm not familiar with that.
Oh, I'm sorry.
That's quite all right.
I was thinking I believe he's the corpse that everybody's posing in the pictures with their thumbs up and everything, and that.
Right. He was. I thought. I don't want to really opine on that because my recollection is pretty hazy of that.
Okay.
But I recall that he was dropped off. It was either by the. I just don't want to go there.
Okay.
I don't. Yeah.
All right. Yeah. Because what I was wondering was whether were these the two that the investigation picked up on that you just talked about.
I don't think so. I think one was Gul Rahman, and I forget who the other one was.
Okay. Well, and
I think that's right, though. But I think you're right. I do believe you're right.
And now, I mean, and the reason I'm getting to that is because You talk about in your reporting about the discrepancy in the numbers here. And I talked with Jason Leopold yesterday, and some of his sources were telling him that there was a discrepancy and some of these people are missing. They've been turned over to presumably they were turned over alive to Egypt or Syria or somewhere else and were never seen again. And I guess
not accounted for.
Yeah,
I don't know. You know, the thing is, and let me admit that I wasn't here last week. I was on my first vacation in more than a year. And so I wasn't involved in the reporting on that particular aspect of this story. Okay. But I do know that, you know, there was a dispute over the numbers as the investigation, as the Senate investigation proceeded. And I know myself that I've reported on one case where Egyptian cleric who lived in Milan was abducted, rendered in the official term, mm-hmm. By the CIA and taken to Egypt, where he claims he was tortured, and then never charged with anything. And I've reported on how. And this was from a former CIA covert officer with knowledge of this case, how they ginned up the case against him in order to justify the rendition. And it turned out that the Egyptians never didn't have anything on him. And while he may have been an inflammatory radical preacher, there was no solid intelligence or evidence linking him to any particular any terrorist act. This is a guy by the name of Abu Omar. So he was one of them. I'm sure he's one of the 26, I believe, who are identified in the report as being detained in violation of whatever legal principles were established for the CIA detention program.
Mm-hmm. And then lastly here, real quick, is it a big problem, do you think, that the CIA gets to take the black magic marker to this summary report before it gets released, or is most of the truth going to come out of it anyway?
It's hard to say. You know, there's a dispute going on. Senator Feinstein has said that she wants the White House to lead the declassification process. I don't know what's going on with that. There's a letter that's been issued today by Senator Mark Udall, who's also a member of the Intelligence Committee and has been pretty outspoken on this stuff, who also says that the CIA should not he says that the White House should limit the CIA's involvement in the declassification process. And let's face it, I mean, there, you know, some people could make a conflict of interest case where you have the agency that's the subject of this report determining what or what not the public should see.
Yeah, you might think. Oh, well, I mean, it's not like any of them are going to be held accountable anyway, so I don't know what they're worried about, but okay. And I'm sorry, one more thing here real quick. Can you give us an update on the status of are there two different Justice Department investigations, one into the Senate Intelligence Committee staff and one into the CIA at the same time for the same problem?
What we've got we know that the CIA asked the Justice Department to launch an investigation into the alleged unauthorized removal of classified materials by the Senate committee staff from the secret facility set up by the CIA, where they did a lot of their research, where they were the only place where they were allowed to look at the documents they used as their source documents for their report. But that referral went to the Justice Department. It's called a criminal referral, and that the Justice Department has, in fact, asked the FBI to investigate. That referral, however, went from the CIA after the CIA's own Inspector General's office asked the Justice Department to launch a criminal investigation into the alleged monitoring of the committee staff's computers in that secret facility by the CIA. Now, as far as we know, the FBI has not begun an investigation into that allegation, but at this point, yes, there are two criminal referrals over at the Justice Department, one of which is being acted on.
All right. Well, thanks very much for your time. It's great to talk to you, Jonathan.
Sure.
I appreciate it. Everybody,
right,
that is Jonathan Lande. He is National Security Beat Reporter for McClatchy Newspapers. That's McClatchyDC.com. And they've got some great stories along these lines lately. The torture report and the controversy between the CIA and the Senate there at McClatchy, D.C. in their national security section. Go check them out. Now, we're late for the news, so we'll be right back after this. Oh, John Kerry's Mideast peace talks have gone nowhere. Hey, I'll Scott Horton here for the Council for the National Interest at councilforthenationalinterest.org. U.S. military and financial support for Israel's permanent occupations of the West Bank and Gaza Strip is immoral, and it threatens national security by helping generate terrorist attacks against our country. And face it, it's bad for Israel, too. Without our unlimited support, they would have much more incentive to reach a lasting peace with their neighbors. It's past time for us to make our government stop making matters worse. Help support CNI at councilforthenationalinterest.org. Hey, I'll Scott Horton here for The Future of Freedom, the monthly journal of the Future of Freedom Foundation. Edited by libertarian purist Sheldon Richman, The Future of Freedom brings you the best of our movement. Featuring articles by Richman, Jacob Hornberger, James Bovard, and many more, The Future of Freedom stands for peace and liberty and against our criminal world empire and Leviathan state. Subscribe today. It's just $25 per year for the back pocket size print edition, $15 per year to read it online. That's The Future of Freedom at fff.org/subscribe. Peace and freedom. Thank you. All right, I'm Scott Horton. This is my show, Scott Horton Show. Did you see this one about the FBI and JSOC working together all along? In the Washington Post? Well, they're old friends. Of course, the hostage rescue team is really, you know, it was created at the same time that the Delta Force and the Navy SEALs and the whatever the hell all was created. It's just the domestic version. They've all, let's see. I guess I don't know all this for a fact, but the way I learned it was that the original SEAL Team 6 was made up of dude, I forgot his name, and his hand-picked guys. And then when they were done figuring out what the hell they were all about, each one of his guys went and became the leader of the what you call it. So he stayed as the head of the SEALs, but then the one guy went and became the new head of the Delta Force, and the other guy went and became the head of Marine Force Recon, and the other guy went and became the head of the FBI hostage rescue team, and then the other guy went and became the head of whatever that Air Force Special Forces is. I forget. Anyway, whatever. So the HRT, they're not just SWAT cops. They really are more like completely militarized soldiers. And I don't really know what the difference is. I mean, SWAT cops are basically, what's the basically? They are militarized soldiers too and trained in the same kind of tactics. I mean, I guess hypothetically, like if this was a movie or something, you would think that maybe the SWAT cops would be taught a little something about protecting innocent life. Whereas, you know, the JSOC don't care about that. HRT sure doesn't either. And anyway, of course, it was the Army Delta Force and the hostage rescue team working in tandem that massacred all the Branch Davidians in 1993. Right around this time, 1993. And according to Lee Hancock at the Dallas Morning News, there were as many as 14 Delta Force operators there. I don't know if they were all there that day, but they were there all along. And former CIA man named Gene Cullen. I guess I could play the sound bites, but anyway. Former CIA guy named Gene Cullen and a former Special Forces officer, I believe a former SEAL named Stephen Barry. Both said that Delta Force guys told them firsthand, so hearsay, but good enough for me, that they confessed that, yeah, they were there pulling triggers, killing Branch Davidians. They didn't admit to setting the fire, I don't guess, but right there at the time while the house was burning, they were there shooting them all. So anyway, then it turns out, according to the Washington Post, that the FBI has been tagging along with the Delta Force and with the Joint Special Operations Command all over Iraq and Afghanistan all along. And now they're bragging about it. What tough guys they are. When they're not entrapping retarded kids at the bookstore into saying Osama into a microphone. They're invading people's countries. It's funny, too, the way they... I love reading the Washington Post sometimes for the irony's sake, you know? Where they talk about how, you know, after about a dozen years of palling around with the special forces in Afghanistan, killing people, the FBI decided, huh, this doesn't really have anything to do with protecting the American people from Al-Qaeda. So we're going to go ahead and go home. And I guess the JSOC guys were mad about it or something, or that's what the FBI says. Let them fight about it. But anyway, I just thought that was funny that, you know, it turns out there actually aren't any Al-Qaeda guys here. Yeah, most of them died. There were only a couple hundred in the first place. Most of them died in the fall of 2001, and the ones that got away back then. There hadn't been Al-Qaeda in Afghanistan this whole damn time. If, you know, Al-Qaeda means an Arab friend of Osama, right? A Saudi or Egyptian or a leftover Arab Afghan from the 80s jihad who was palling around with Osama and all that. Most of them just got bombed to death by the Air Force back in 01. It took, I don't know how many years for the FBI to figure out that, man, I haven't seen an Arab in a decade! Riding around in Afghanistan. It's almost as though there are no Arabs here. Well, anyway. So, I don't know. I guess it just means you're in more danger. Because the FBI, our national police force here in America, is that much more dangerous. For all the blood that they've spilt, all the battles they've been in, full-scale battles. You know, Chalmers Johnson, he used to say, if you don't give up your empire, you're going to live under it. And I think you can kind of see what he meant. Everybody's complaining, especially right-wingers, since it's Democrats in power now. I mean, real principled leftists are good on this stuff still, but liberals don't have a damn thing to say about it. You know, run-of-the-mill Democrats and stuff. Now it's the right-wingers who are objecting, along with the libertarians and anybody who's a decent person at all, but politically speaking, it's the right-wingers who are objecting to the militarization of the police and the arming up of the police with all this military gear and military weaponry. And with these massive MRAP armored personnel carriers, mine-resistant armored personnel carriers. And people are saying, well, wait a minute, man, I grew up in this county and I don't remember the sheriffs ever needed MRAPs before. Who are you at war with anyway, man? And so people are getting upset about it, but of course, you know, you still got a right to be upset about it, but you should at least, you know, recognize that this wasn't a problem back before MRAPs had ever been invented. MRAPs were only invented for the Iraq and Afghan occupations, which America never had any right to do. And both of which were supported by and large by supermajority for a decade plus now by the American right. And then, you know, you're supposedly better than liberals on economics. What do you think's going to happen when the Pentagon has all this equipment and nobody's country to occupy with it anymore other than our own? They give it away to your local sheriff's department, your local sheriff's department. And then your local sheriff's department can't wait to find an excuse to use it. Man, they're so bummed out that it's another MRAP-less day in town. The first time and every time they get a chance, they're going to deploy this equipment against you. And you wonder where, you know, Andy Griffith and Don Knotts went. You got them blown up in your stupid war. They're gone. And instead, what came home was a bunch of hardened combat veterans and they brought their equipment with them. And they're now your local police. And so those damned busybody nanny state liberals that you hate so much, if you dare cross them, they'll be sending your military state after you. And so, you know, blowback is a bitch. And I'm not saying anybody deserves to have a militarized SWAT team destroy their house, destroy their family, destroy their lives, maybe take their lives. I'm not saying that. I'm just saying, don't sit there scratching your head wondering why it is that your cops all wear black now instead of blue or brown, and why they all wear SWAT soldier gear instead of a blouse, and why they all carry gigantic weapons instead of a little 38. Why they walk around with an M4 on their chest like the U.S. Army. It's because they are U.S. Army. Just discharged 6 weeks ago. Now I'm pulling you over. So anyway. And then here's the thing. Again, none of those wars were justified in the first place. So, American conservatives, you've done this to yourselves and the rest of us. Thank you very much. For nothing. Just like a million Iraqis died for no good purpose. The American state is that much more militarized at home and hell everywhere else in the world. Us and the Damned. That's the name of this song. The final count of the collision between us and the Damned. I think that's what it is. This is what plays right before Fight the Power starts.
So you're a libertarian, and you don't believe the propaganda about government awesomeness you were subjected to in fourth grade. You want real history and economics. Well, learn in your car from professors you can trust with Tom Woods' Liberty Classroom. And if you join through the Liberty Classroom link at scotthorton.org, we'll make a donation to support the Scott Horton Show. Liberty Classroom, the history and economics they didn't teach you.
You hate government? One of them libertarian types? Or maybe you just can't stand the president, gun grabbers, or warmongers? Me too. That's why I invented LibertyStickers.com. Well, Rick owns it now, and I didn't make up all of them, but still, if you're driving around and want to tell everyone else how wrong their politics are, there's only one place to go. LibertyStickers.com has got your bumper covered. Left, right, libertarian, empire, police state, founders quote, central banking. Yes, bumper stickers about central banking. Lots of them. And, well, everything that matters. LibertyStickers.com. Everyone else's stickers suck. All right, I'm Scott. This is my show, Scott Horton Show. And, I don't know, man. There's so much to talk about, I don't really feel like talking about it. I guess I gotta come up with something to say here. More by Stephen Cohen in The Nation. I like this guy. He won't ever do my show. I guess he's just always busy. That's what he always says. Doesn't seem personal or nothing. He just won't do the damn show. But he's got another one here. Cold War again. Who's responsible? And the answer is America. I really need to be doing a better job on this. You know, I just kick myself for not doing every possible thing I could to get my voice out there against the war in Iraq and the run-up to the war in Iraq. And when you've got falsehood on this magnitude, it's got to be countered. There's nothing more important than this. I mean, and for crying out loud, we're talking about America's relationship with Russia. And they got more H-bombs than anybody but us. And so that means we've got to keep it cool. That's it. You ever see science fiction where it's after the Earth has been nuked and all of our massive high-tech cities are ghost towns, graveyards, not just of the dead people, but of a dead society nuked off the face of the Earth? We don't want that to happen, right? Right. Okay, good. I'm just, you know, making sure everybody's with me here. We need to be working on eliminating H-bombs. But you know what? We can just start with making sure that we're getting along with Russia. Now, here they are saying, oh, we're going to punish you by suspending all NASA cooperation. Oh, would you stop it? Can't you guys all collect more welfare from the American taxpayer if you continue the NASA cooperation, for Christ's sake? Contractors, bureaucrats, everybody in both countries ought to be on board for more and ever-increasing amounts of cooperation on space. Please. You know what? I'm the most libertarian person on this whole planet Earth. You can ask Anthony or Sheldon Richmond. They'll tell you. But man, I am for bribing the Americans and the Russians into working together on projects like that. We've got to have as many mutual interests with these people as we can until we can work on withering away our states. Dictatorship is not the path to withering away your state, by the way, you dumb Russians. You gotta wither the damn thing. Wither it! Not empower it. Who in the hell? Oh, Karl Marx. I was gonna say, whoever came up with dictatorship is the path to total liberty. Yeah, for the dictator. Anyway, who's responsible? I'll tell you who's responsible. Barack Obama and his government. He swore in Dick Cheney's Eastern Europe advisor. Are you kidding me? Obama nominated her. He didn't have to. Now, maybe somebody threatened to embarrass him politically. Maybe someone threatened to really hurt him politically. Maybe someone was going to call him names. Maybe they were going to make him ride in an open-topped limousine in Dallas. Maybe a lot of things. But he did not have to make Victoria Nuland the ambassador to Europe. I mean, basically the undersecretary of state for European affairs. And one must only assume that Barack Obama was in on every last bit of her conspiracy, and John Kerry, for that matter, too. I haven't heard the slightest hint of an accusation that this woman was insubordinate. She's just the one busted, right? John McCain is a senator and is somewhat independent from Obama's foreign policy, and, you know, a little bit. Not that the president can't put his foot down at some point, but John McCain can go over there, and he's at least a little bit deniable. But Victoria Nuland going over to Ukraine and being photographed with all the so-called dissidents, the people who lost the election last time, including a bunch of neo-Nazis, and passing out cookies to the protesters and all of this crap. He didn't recall her after that, did he? Nope. And then the story leaked. The audio leaked of Victoria Nuland and Jeffrey Pyatt, the ambassador to Ukraine, conspiring to on the form of the new government. And they got exactly what they wanted, too. Yatsenyuk, who's the head of, what's her name? Yulia Tymoshenko's party. She was in prison at the time, but he was her right-hand man, or her two right-hand men, got the prime minister's spot, and then I forgot which other spot temporarily anyway. And this is the coup government. The coup regime is exactly the one that the Americans are caught planning to put in power. And it's not just that it's a pro-Western, pro-EU, pro-American government. They were trying to get them to sign an agreement that included military cooperation with NATO. Pseudo-NATO membership for Ukraine. And it is, you know, I'm not saying that Putin's not a politician. He's a horrible guy in every way. He's a politician. But still, it is what it is. The Americans provoked this thing. And they had no reason in the world to expect that he would let them get away with it. And in fact, Jeffrey Pyatt is on the audio saying, you know, if this thing starts gaining altitude, the Russians are going to be sure to do everything they can to shoot it down. And of course, they're talking about the success of getting the actual coup accomplished and whether he'll try to stop it or not. And we don't know everything that they said or thought. You gotta assume they at least tried for a moment to think about what might happen if they succeeded with the coup in Kiev. Huh, that'll show them. Is that it? Because the way Putin made his case was, listen, Sevastopol, and I know I'm not pronouncing it right, but who cares? I'm from Texas. I don't have to. I should never have to care about Crimea at all, but my government has made it my responsibility, so I'm doing my best, okay? Putin said, Sevastopol, you know, it was just too hard for me to imagine going there to visit our American friends in NATO and their NATO naval base there after this has been our naval base for 200 years. Get it? That's a pretty cutesy way of saying it for Vladimir Putin. But think about that seriously from his position for just 1 minute. You're the president of Russia. The Americans are openly talking about bringing Ukraine into NATO. And they're working and succeeding, then succeed, working on and then succeed in pushing a coup d'etat regime change, pro-Western regime change, in Kiev. And all in the name of getting Ukraine to sign a deal that includes military cooperation and the beginning of military integration with NATO. What in the world do you think he would do? And then the Americans are such damn liars. The U.S. government can't tell the truth about anything ever. And therefore the U.S. media either. They just go along with this. Oh, that Putin. He's so mean. And you know, I can't even understand the things that he says when he's talking because his language is so screwy and hard to understand. But it sounds like he's pretty mean or something. They don't ever give you any detail other than, boy, what a mean guy this is for doing the things he does. And they wouldn't dare for a moment tell you. After all, America did pick this fight. How many times has Wolf Blitzer interjected to his guests and said, now, I mean, come on, because, you know, there was a U.S. and European-backed coup d'etat in Kiev before Putin did the thing in Crimea, right? So we shouldn't just entirely leave that out of the story because the context might matter a little bit, right? That's right, he's never said that. Or I guess, correct me if I'm wrong, but I can't imagine that he did. And Wolf Blitzer is actually the kind of deer in the headlight sort of a dude who actually might say that because he doesn't realize how scandalous it is to point it out and that you're really not supposed to say that, Wolf, you know? It's kind of too dumb to be all the way in on it sometimes. You know, you've noticed that about Wolf Blitzer, right? He asks an important question because he doesn't really realize that it's any different than all the inanity that he's constantly on about either, you know? But anyway, so you got to ask yourself whether it really makes sense from your pro-American point of view to have an alliance with every nation in Europe. An alliance in the literal sense. Meaning, if they get into a war, you get into a war. No matter what. If someone invades them, you, your family, in the case of Russia, maybe your town, is up for battle. Is sworn to defend, to intervene. And, you know, think about the worst that could happen if the Russians invaded and conquered the Ukrainians compared to what would happen if America met them with military force on the ground there. And even John McCain says, hey, there's no military option there. But John McCain wants to bring them into NATO. Well, so which is it? Oh, I'm afraid it's going to be more like this. Atom bombs. Phone records, financial and location data, Prism, Tempora, X-Keyscore, Boundless Informant. Hey, y'all, Scott Horton here for offnow.org. Now, here's the deal. Due to the Snowden revelations, we have a great opportunity for a short period of time to get some real rollback of the national surveillance state. Now, they're already trying to tire us by introducing fake reforms in the Congress. And the courts, they betrayed their sworn oaths to the Constitution and Bill of Rights again and again, and can in no way be trusted to stop the abuses for us. We've got to do it ourselves. How? We nullify it at the state level. It's still not easy, but the OffNow project of the 10th Amendment Center has gotten off to a great start. I mean it. There's real reason to be optimistic here. They've gotten their model legislation introduced all over the place, in state after state. I've lost count, more than a dozen. You're always wondering, yeah, but what can we do? Here's something. Something important. Something that can work if we do the work. Get started cutting off the NSA support in your state. Go to offnow.org. You know, I got sick of SLF for a long time, but I guess now it's been long enough, it's nostalgic or something. Again. They say they're a part of you, but that's not true, you know? Alright, well, so this is my show, the Scott Horton Show. And, well, lots of stuff to talk about. I guess I want to talk about Glenn Greenwald. I sure like Glenn Greenwald, man. You know, he's been writing great stuff since about 2005. He started on this blog, Unclaimed Territory, writing about the NSA stuff mostly back in the Bush years. And then he moved on to Salon.com, and he stayed pretty good. And the thing about Glenn is, I'm pretty sure that he's about a typical run-of-the-mill Democrat on almost everything. You know, he's kind of a center-left. He's not some commie, like, hardcore ideologue. He's only an ideologue on the Bill of Rights. That's his thing where, you know, he starts spitting and clawing and fighting and getting pissed off and refuses to back down. He's that, hey, the Bill of Rights is the law, you bastards, and that's the end of that. And so he's just a madman on the Bill of Rights, and so, good. Although, and I think he's, you know, probably half decent on guns. You know how liberals are on guns. They're never going to be really perfect on it or anything, but I think he's decent on guns compared to maybe some on the left. But when it comes to Social Security and Medicare and Medicaid and federalism and the power of the courts and civil rights and all the role of the federal government and all of our lives now, the regulatory state and all of that, he's not against all that. He's you know, up to his eyeballs and being a Democrat when it comes to all that typical good government stuff. Which is funny because all the right wingers or all the other left wingers who hate him because they love Obama so much, they always try to attack him and make him some kind of libertarian and say that he's a right winger because, oh, he did an anti-drug war study for the Cato Institute, and that's funded by the Koch brothers. And so, oh, he's been bought off by the Koch brothers, they say, and this kind of crap. But the truth of the matter is that I don't think he could buy the dude off. And I don't know how much he made, how much you know, money he made being a lawyer, but or I don't know how much Salon.com was paying him and whether he was making good investments with it or what. But he sure doesn't ever seem to be intimidated when it comes to his, you know, professional career. You take anything, take everything away from him, he still has unclaimed territory, right? Even if he's not at The Guardian or anywhere else. And you might remember when all this, you know, Anonymous hacked H.B. Gary and posted all of their stuff online. This is kind of a, one of these quasi-governmental private fascist security firms in Washington, D.C. And Glenn Greenwald is one of the most prominent supporters of WikiLeaks in the media. So they wanted to hurt WikiLeaks by hurting Greenwald. And then so they're brainstorming in their documents about, you know, what we can do to hurt this Greenwald to make him back down from his support for WikiLeaks. And, you know, what we'll do is we'll try to ruin his career. And, you know, these journalist types, man, they might act brave for a minute, but push comes to shove, they're not going to give up their money and whatever. And remember, were you around at the time? Remember when that came out? And remember how absolutely laughably ridiculous that was on its face? That, you know, like Bugs Bunny, these people don't know him very well, do they? They think that they could intimidate Glenn Greenwald by threatening his money. You know what? I don't know exactly, you know, whether the guy's a born millionaire or what, but I'm pretty sure he is not sweating the threat. And I don't think he ever was that worried about it. The guy is, you know, a member of the New York bar after all. Comes down to it, he can go back to work making real money, being the most famous lawyer in the world now, if he decided he wanted to do that. They don't know him very well, but I do, and I've interviewed the guy 100 times. I haven't been able to get him on the show in the last year because he's hot shit, I guess, and, well, whatever. But I don't mind. I don't take it personal. I'm still his biggest fan, and I'm very proud to let y'all know, if you didn't already know, that he's won the Polk Award, and he's in New York. He's come home to America today with Laura Poitras, the documentary filmmaker, who is also the equal recipient of the entire Edward Snowden leak. And they appeared together in New York and with Barton Gellman from the Washington Post, and Ewan McCaskill is the name of the Guardian reporter who originally accompanied Greenwald and Poitras to Hong Kong and did a lot of the original reporting of the first stories with them. And they're all winning the Polk Award, which I don't know everything about that, but it means you're a badass journalist. And, you know, it could mean you're a very acceptable journalist in normal times, but not this time. And so take that, government. Boy, they hate Glenn Greenwald. And I tried to warn him. I was being facetious, but I let him know. When this stuff first came out last June, you could go back to the archives and hear me. Word to the wise in the media, word to the wise, the representatives of the U.S. government, when you try to take on this Greenwald, comes down to winning arguments in writing or out loud. Boy, looking into your camera on your cable TV news show, he is going to whoop your ass. You are not up to the challenge of arguing with this dude at all. You need a new strategy. You need an original strategy. You want to fight Glenn Greenwald, you're going to have to pull off some kind of jiu-jitsu, you know, or you know, maybe if you got the best Socrates knockoff around where you could somehow try to draw him out only with questions or something. But you try to accuse him, you try to come at him, he's going to cut you to pieces. And yeah, I was right about that. How many times has that happened since all this has happened? Virtually every time he's been on the air, on the BBC, MSNBC, and on CNN and Fox, and on NBC and ABC, whenever they have him on, he just destroys them. They're not as smart as him. And they're not as practiced at being right. You know, it's that old thing. There's 100 different cliches, right? About, was it Abraham Lincoln? I think it may be a damn lie, but Abraham Lincoln said that no one is smart enough nobody has a good enough memory to be a really good liar or some crap like that. I misremembered it wrong. That's proof right there. I don't have the memory either, but all they have is talking points and nonsense, and all Greenwald has is being right about these issues over and over again for now 9 years in a row. And you know what? There is no one in the entire world that would have been a better recipient of this leak from Edward Snowden than Glenn Greenwald. I mean, if you were Edward Snowden and you decided that, you know what, it is all legal under your, you know, raped and bleeding interpretation of Section 215 of the Patriot Act, it's legal. And under your, nah, never mind what it really says interpretation of 702 of the FISA Amendments Act or Executive Order 12333. Oh, it's all legal within the rules and the regulations, which are all in direct and total violation of the Fourth Amendment to the U.S. Constitution. And if you're Ed Snowden and you have this information and you believe that the American people have a right to know what is going on here. And as he put it now, he went to his bosses over and over again, 11, 12 times. They try to say he's a liar. Who do you believe? He said he went to them over and over again. I wouldn't be surprised if that's in his leak to Greenwald somewhere. Wait till they deny that I ever complained through official channels and then publish this one. I bet you that one's coming. But anyway, I still believe him over them no matter what. Not no matter what, but until there's a good argument the other way. But anyway, point being, if you were him and you decided this had to be done, this stuff has got to get into the paper. Can you imagine a better reporter to get this stuff to? Someone more reliable who you could really trust to take this stuff and publish it and get it out there. And in a way that doesn't get y'all, you know, executed for treason and whatever. That's exactly what I would have done too. And Barton Gellman was a good choice too, because he is a Washington Post reporter, but he's thorough. He's a bit mainstream, but that's all right. You know what? In fact, I don't think the Greenwald would be in America accepting the Polk Award today if it wasn't for the fact that Barton Gellman is there too. And I don't think the U.S. is quite ready to pick the ultimate fight with the Washington Post and New York Times at this point. They're compliant enough on 99% of everything. And they might just lose. Here's some more plagiarism of somebody else's cliche, but you don't go to war with people who buy their ink by the oil tanker full. And so, you know, if you really want to bring down the New York Times, they might bring you down first by telling everybody what they really know about you, you know. Well, I don't know. Seems like these guys can get away with anything now. But anyway, three cheers for Glenn Greenwald and for Laura Poitras. I don't know as much about her. You know, presumably she's got a documentary coming out about Snowden soon. Greenwald's got a book coming out. Should be this month or next month, something like that. I've already pre-ordered it over there at scotthorton.org/Amazon. And you can too. And anyway, so, by the way, as far as I know, by the way, this should sort of be the main point every time, I guess. By the way, if you type in these two acronyms together, EFF and NSA, into Google, you will come up with the Electronic Frontier Foundation and their entire NSA section. But there's one that's called Primary Sources. And the one that's called Primary Sources, it's not just the primary sources, it's the secondary ones too. So it's the whole list of every article that's been published based on the Snowden documents so far, and a bit more too. Some of the leaks, some of the official stuff that's been published by the state since then too, important stuff. And then all the firsthand documents as well. That's EFF NSA. Hey, y'all, Scott here. First, I want to take a second to thank all the show's listeners, sponsors, and supporters for helping make this show what it is. I literally couldn't do it without you. And now I want to tell you about the newest way to help support the show. Whenever you shop at Amazon.com, stop by ScottHorton.org first and just click the Amazon logo on the right side of the page. That way, the show will get a kickback from Amazon's end of the sale. It won't cost you an extra cent. And it's not just books. Amazon.com sells just about everything in the world except cars, I think. So whatever you need, they've got it. Just click the Amazon logo on the right side of the page at ScottHorton.org or go to ScottHorton.org/Amazon. Man, here's a story that would be huge if Barack Obama wasn't black and a Democrat. Holy crap. The deportation president. Obama has banished nearly 1.6 million people. Oh my God. 1.6 million people. For minor offenses like traffic violations. Boy, this is like every Republican's dream come true, right? Just round up all the Mexicans and ship them back at gunpoint. Or, more likely, hold them in pens without charges like Guantanamo at prisons in the desert for, you know, a while and then send them back. Because that's fun. I honestly cannot figure out why the right wing does not love Barack Obama. All this crap about how he's some kind of, left-wing radical commie Muslim Black Panther, when he's clearly a right-wing brown shirt Gestapo conservative like you. The deportation president. Obama has banished nearly 1.6 million people for minor offenses like traffic violations. And then this one is from the new Vox site. Obama is deporting more immigrants than any president in history. And then check it out. They got a better stat in here I want to find. Where the hell did this stat go? It was great. It was, it's 1,010 per day. 1,010 per day. That is amazing. That is just incredible. And you know what the liberal answer is? Well, the right wingers would be worse. And arguably that's true. And so therefore the liberal left wingers, when they're in power, can be as right wing as they want. They can start as many wars as they want. They can back as many jihads and revolutions and dictators as they want. They can exile as many Mexicans as they want. They can lock up as many black people for smoking dope as they want. They can do whatever they want. They can murder Americans with robots and brag about it if they want. And, there you go. You got to admit that for the empire, hiring Barack Obama was some great PR. I mean, not that you had to be a genius to come up with it or anything. But it's a pretty successful, even to this day, it's a pretty successful advertising campaign on their part to bring in Barack Obama to be the "I've been there" face on this most cruel world empire. It's just incredible. And the deportations is just one symbol of it. It's just one part of it. And you know, who was it the other day talking about, it was bumming me out? Oh, you know who it was? It was Clive Stafford Smith, the lawyer who represents the torture victims. I take the things that he says very seriously. And, you know, he talks like a Brit, but he's half a Brit and half an American. And you could tell he really cares. He identifies with America just like you do and I do. Say his country too. And he says, he travels the world. I mean, he's the guy from Reprieve. He does. He travels the world. He knows people and he interacts with people in his profession and in his professional life with people all over the world. And America is just despised. And, you know, you talk about a good PR campaign. I talk about a good PR campaign. Only the Americans are dumb enough to believe in it. Hiring Barack Obama didn't fool anyone in Palestine or in Egypt or in Iraq or Pakistan or Syria or Russia. Help warm things over with the Europeans a little bit. But, you know, the Middle East, they tuned in and they saw the Cairo speech and then they saw nothing but killing and lying and hypocrisy and no peace deal, no settlement freeze, no democratic reform, no end to the drone war, no nuclear deal. And they're over it real quick over there in the Middle East. Boy, they never had much reason to believe in us, not since World War II at all. Barack Obama came in. They said, all right, you got about 15 minutes to prove you mean well at all. And then, oh, there goes that. All he did was start massacring them all day. Hated around the world. Just despised. And all this crap about democracy and freedom and human rights, no one on earth takes it seriously anymore at all. And you know what? As bad as America has been on a lot of those issues for a long, long time, America's had its good points on those issues as well. And as hypocritical as it has been, and as a, you know, kind of a fig leaf for the cruelty of the American empire overseas and its true policies, the Americans actually have insisted that their satellite states begin adopting more of a rule of law, more of a regime of property rights, and not just in the completely corrupt so that multinational corporations can come in and steal everything sense, but, you know, half really, anyway. A limit to taxation, a limit to attempted centralized control of the economy. And it really has helped to benefit people around the world. And, you know, I hate democracy, actually, but man, I hate dictatorship worse. And for people to begin to have a semblance of self-government, democracy doesn't have to just mean majority rule. It can be pregnant with all that other meaning about individual rights protected and more or less capitalism and reasonable taxation and an independent judiciary and some of these things. And it has been the case in the past, even though it's hypocritical, even where you don't have, you know, rules and regulations like IMF deals and stuff, but where you just have the bully pulpit, where America has been able to say to the Chinese, hey, man, you ought to start treating your people right. And the people of China get to say, you know, get to have, it helps them a little, I guess, in some cases, that there's this example of, you know, how oppressed they are and how it doesn't have to be that way. It could be less so. They could have much more freedom of information. They could have much more of a right to protest the way things are and whatever. And it's been, you know, their pressure on other governments to be better has been somewhat beneficial in some cases. I wouldn't even argue it's more harm than good, honestly. But at this point, it doesn't mean a thing to anyone anymore at all. That's the real point. Now, it's just the butt of a joke. Oh, the Americans called. They said that we ought to start giving people fair trials. Anyway, pass me a beer. Or a slave, or whatever. Oh, yeah, you know, the Americans called. They said we shouldn't assassinate people in other countries. The Americans called. They said we shouldn't, you know, take this peninsula that used to belong to us back. The Americans complained, this, that, and the other thing, and it all falls flat. You know, and this is as obvious as can be, but I like some of my more favorite examples. I like bringing them up. One of my examples that I've used a lot of times, but still there's truth in it, you might want to know, was an old Christian pastor. I don't know how old he was. A Christian pastor who used to be, at least, a regular on Fox News, and they would have him on all the time. And he would go around the world on missions, and he would come on and talk about, you know, whatever, I don't know. So they had him on, and he told, I think it was the Hannity show, and this would have been like 04 or 05 or something like that, maybe 06, but probably like 05 or something. And they had him on Hannity, and I guess they hadn't rehearsed all this. It was his regular kind of spot or something, I don't know. But they certainly didn't have him on to say this deliberately. And he came on and he said, Sean Hannity, we have to stop the war in Iraq right now. We have to stop the what we're doing in the Middle East right now. Oh, my God. And Sean Hannity's like, what are you talking about? What in the world? You? You know, Ed too, Brutus and all this. I can't believe that you, my favorite right-wing missionary, pastor, regular, trustworthy guest on Fox News, would come on and say that. You're what in the world are you talking about? And he said, I'm traveling all through East Asia and through Indonesia, through Korea and Japan and through China and through, you know, Thailand and whatever. And everywhere I go, And he's a missionary, this guy. He says, everywhere I go and I try to spread the gospel of Christianity and of Jesus Christ, they tell me, oh, yeah, right, that's the religion of the Americans who invaded Iraq. Huh, so much for you and your, you know, honesty and your beliefs. And so why would we believe you, convert to your stupid religion when we already have our own kind of thing? Because of the bare hypocrisy of it all. Treat others as you would like to be treated. What? And so to this pastor, at the end of the day, no, he loves Jesus more than he loves America. Are you kidding? He loves God more than he loves his country. God is forever to him. And he's out there, in his mind at least, saving people's souls that they might live forever in the kingdom of God. And so something like American foreign policy ranks way down on the list of things that are important. And if something like American foreign policy is making people hate the gospel of Jesus, the most important thing to him, well, then something's got to stop. Something's got to be done. Something's got to change. It's an emergency. And that's just, it's a small taste of the suffering that the brand of America and Western civilization and all of our claims to freedom and liberty and justice and tolerance have suffered around the world. And think about if you're trying to export blue jeans, right? I mean, maybe the army buys some things from Levi's or whatever, but I think most blue jean companies are mostly free market organizations, at least in their sales, right? I don't know where they get all their cotton and all their cloth, but it's not like they're all just fat on government contracts or something. They sell to free consumers in the marketplace, and they would like to sell brand USA blue jeans to the people of the world and make $10 zillion. And yet, you know, that kind of thing has fallen off in the last 25 years or so, and the last 10 or 12 especially, because of what the Republicans have done. Oh, man, I'm over time. I gotta go. Because of what the Democrats and Republicans have done.